Oh, darling, stay right there. You're wrapped up in Emerson Damron's Medicated Minutes, America's number one avant-garde personal development program on K-Chung Los Angeles. Let it tease you a little. Let it charm you open. Let it remind you that becoming yourself doesn't always have to hurt. Sometimes it can purr, sometimes it can wink, and sometimes, honey, levity saves lives.
I've got it. What's that? Oh, yes, the ticket he told me about. Well, let's see what he has to say. Here's the latest on my broken ankle. Doc says I'll be all right, only I have to stay off my feet for a week or so. Anyway, here's the ticket for the High Teen Carnival. It's too late to turn it in, so you have yourself a time and tell me all about it. One couple. That means a date. Not like just going around with the crowd. Just me and the girl. Well, that's all right. Only, what girl? Who?
How do you choose a date? Whose company would you enjoy? Well, one thing you can consider is looks. Woody thought of Janice and how good-looking she was. He'd really have to rate to date somebody like her. Yes, he'd enjoy that. Except, well, it's too bad Janice always acts so superior and bored. She'd make a fellow feel awkward and inferior. Well, perhaps someone who doesn't feel superior. There's Betty. And yet, it just doesn't seem as if she'd be much fun. What about Anne? She knows how to have a good time and how to make the fellow with her relax, have fun too. Yes, that's what a boy likes. He wants to know he's appreciated. Anne would be fun on a date. So Woody decided he'd ask Anne for this first date. But just how should he ask her? And what if she refused? No, it won't be easy asking for that first date.
Well, Woody,
huh? Hi, Ed.
What you doing?
Just thinking.
Don't work too hard.
Ed, is this private?
No, stick around if you like.
Well, hello, Edward. I thought I heard you come in.
Hi, Mom. What's for supper?
Oh, Mom, is it all right with you if I have a date Saturday night?
Well, of course, you generally go out on Saturday.
Hello, may I speak to Mary, please?
But, Mom, this is different. A date. I haven't asked her yet, but I'd like to take Aunt Davis to the High Teen Carnival.
Oh, Anne's a nice girl, but a date? Well, you're rather young.
Oh, Mom, give him a break. I think he can swing it. We all have to start sometime.
Well, if you don't overdo on dating, Ed knows what I mean. Weekends only, and not too late.
Thanks,
Mary. I just called up to check on the night. I think I can get by a little earlier than usual.
How's 7:30? All right, Mary. Bye now.
Boy, you sure make it sound easy. How do you do it?
Practice, my boy. Experience.
But I don't think I'll know what to say. What to talk about?
Now, don't worry about that. Just be your natural, talkative old self. Come on, let's see what's for supper.
Wait a minute. Oh, Mom, is the floor dry yet?
Yes, you can come in.
Thank you.
Mr. Davis. This is Woody. Alan Woodruff. May I speak to Anne?
How do you ask for a date? What about this?
Anne? Well, how about a date?
Well, really, no thanks, Woody.
Well, suppose he did it this way.
Hi, Anne. What you doing Saturday night?
Well, I guess I'm busy.
Oh, yeah? Any chance of giving him the brush off for me?
Well, of all the nerve!
Well, is there another way?
Anne? This is Woody. Well, I have a ticket for the High Teen Carnival Saturday, and... Well, would you like to go?
Why, yes, Woody. I'll have to talk to my folks about it, but I think I can go. That'll be fun.
Yeah. Well, shall I pick you up about 8 o'clock?
That's fine, Woody. 8 o'clock Saturday. I think it'll be all right, but I'll let you know for sure. Bye. A day with Woody. Saturday. Come here.
Hi, Anne.
Hi, Judy.
What are you doing?
Why aren't you the inquisitive little sister? I'm getting ready for my date tonight with Woody.
Oh, he's nice. A date, huh? What'll you do? Go to some fancy place for dinner?
No, silly. We're going to the High Teen Carnival, and then he'll bring me home.
Oh, that doesn't sound like much.
We'd have fun at the carnival, you and I, wouldn't we?
Oh, yes.
Well, Woody and I are going to have fun in just that way. I think the important thing about a date is to have a good time. And you don't need to spend a lot of money to do that. You just enjoy whatever you do, whether it's movies or parties or anything. And you leave your boyfriend enough money, so he'll ask you again.
My, you'll be out late.
Why not particularly late? Mom and Dad and I have an agreement about what time to come in. Look, will you honey and get my stockings from the bathroom?
Sure.
Mom! Do we have any cleaning fluid? There's a spot on my coat.
Goodness, you know we have some. Look here, let me...
No, I'll do it.
That's it, son. Look your best. Your first date is mighty important to you.
Yeah. Dad, were you excited the night of your first date?
I sure was.
So was I. I took my date seriously. A date was a major event. Why, the night of my first date, my date had a flat tire and he was an hour late. And he didn't even bother to call me. Well, when he finally came, I had to run upstairs and do my face and my hair all over again. Oh, I was so upset.
That fella had a lot to learn about girls. Your mother lost all interest in him after she met me.
And the moral of that story is that I should be on time tonight, right?
You bet. And the same goes for Anne.
Any girl who can't be ready on time for a date isn't good enough for my boy. Well, what are you doing? Oh, go find a mirror so you can see yourself.
Hi, Woody.
Oh, hi.
Good night, eh?
Yeah. Flowers. Anne won't expect flowers, will she?
Huh? Oh, I hardly think so. I'm taking these to Mary because it's a special occasion. Of course, if you want to take flowers anyway, I guess there's no law against it.
But I don't have to, unless it's a risky affair.
Well, that's the general idea. Flowers for a prom or a very special party. Otherwise, you don't need to. Say, I'll have to run.
Me too.
See you later. I'm going, folks.
All right, Ed. Have a nice time.
But when you're having so much fun, time goes all too fast. Well, it's the time Anne had set for getting home. And now, good night. The end of a perfect evening. But how do you say good night? Perhaps.
Don't, please.
What am I?
Or it could go this way.
Well, so long.
Just like that. After all, a girl likes to know you've had a good time. So let's try saying goodnight again. One more way.
Well, it's getting late.
Yes, it is. I'd ask you in for a bite to eat if it weren't so late. Let's plan to get home in time for a sandwich or something next time.
Say, that sounds good. I'll call you next week.
Will you? Well, thanks so much. I had loads of fun.
So did I.
Good night, Woody.
Night, Anne.
George Putnam. I'd like to begin with a fact, a simple yet shocking fact. It is this: a flood tide of filth is engulfing our country in the form of newsstand obscenity and is threatening to pervert an entire generation of our American children. We know that once a person is perverted, it is practically impossible for that person to adjust to normal attitudes in regard to sex. Yet much of this material has been described as an illustrated, detailed course in perversion, abnormal sex, crime, and violence. It is also a fact that no matter who buys this material, 75 to 90% of it ends up in the hands of our children. Now, you might ask yourself, why this sudden concern? Pornography and sex deviation have always been with mankind. This is true. But now consider another fact. Never in the history of the world have the merchants of obscenity, the teachers of unnatural sex acts, had available to them the modern facilities for disseminating this filth. High-speed presses, rapid transportation, mass distribution, all have combined to put the vilest obscenity within reach of every man, woman, and child in the country. In the past few years, this obscenity traffic and salacious newsstand literature have become increasingly worse, not only in content, but in volume. This traffic continues to increase and flourish for one reason. It is big business, profitable business, for the mercenary persons who produce it, and for its more than 800 distributors. The United States Supreme Court has described it as dirt for dirt's sake. We describe it as dirt for money's sake. Obscene literature is a $2 billion a year business. That's $2 billion. Through this material, today's youth can be stimulated to sexual activity for which he has no legitimate outlet. He is even enticed to enter the world of homosexuals, lesbians, sadists, masochists, and other sex deviants. The psychiatric terms for these unnatural sex acts are unknown to most decent adults in our country. But through this salacious material, these abnormalities are corrupting the minds and the hearts of our children. Perversion for profit. Here is the most vicious, the most insidious feature of these publications. They constantly portray abnormal sexual behavior as being normal. They glorify unnatural sex acts. They tell youngsters that it's smart, it's thrilling, it provides kicks to be a homosexual, a sadist, and every other kind of deviant. The Military Chaplains Association of the United States, practically every major fraternal, civic, and religious organization, the juvenile court judges, the Federal Bureau of Investigation, innumerable psychiatrists, sociologists, and psychologists, attribute the moral decay among our people in very large part to the obscene and pornographic literature so prevalent in our society. This moral decay weakens our resistance to the onslaught of the communist masters of deceit. A major factor that makes youngsters prime targets for this printed filth is the natural curiosity of youth about the mysterious force of sex. Yet, on virtually every newsstand is a welter of misinformation which can wreck them for life. Well, at this point, my friends, I wish to make it clear that the obscenity I'm talking about and the examples that I'm about to show you were not bought on the sly from under the counter. They were not purchased on Skid Row or on the other side of the tracks. They can be bought openly by anyone in drugstores, groceries, delicatessens, terminals, malt shops, cigar stores, newsstands, all over the community. They can be purchased by children, whether in a small town like McAllen and the Rio Grande, or in Chicago, New York, or Los Angeles. A prime example of one major category are the so-called girly magazines, which sell over 15 million copies a month. These highly colorful magazines picture stark nudity on slick paper. They often present their subject on bed or couch, in positions indicative of intercourse or other sex acts, obviously calculated to stimulate the reader. The nakedness, the nudity of these magazines is defended and foisted upon the people by a vociferous minority in our society. They lack the moral standards and values of our Judeo-Christian heritage. They not only oppose the principles of that heritage, which has given us our rich institutions and laws, but they advocate their overthrow. For the sake of decency in this film, we have partially covered the pictures and disguised the identity of the model. But actually, these magazines not only display complete nudity, but they do so in a perverted manner. Such is this appeal to the sodomist. Such as these shots, which are typical of the preoccupation with the female breast, to a point that it has become a fetish. And this one, with its overtones of bestiality, and with lesbian implications. Another important problem common to these publications is the dwelling upon teenage participation in wild, flagrant abuses of the God-given gift of sex. This is amply depicted by the pose of this obviously young girl, her clothes in the disarray of sexual activity, with the stimulus of alcohol indicated by the tumbler placed on her thigh. And again, the breast fetish. Note the sensual expression alluded to by Dr. Sorokin, the renowned Harvard sociologist, as being the hallmark of so much of contemporary photography. And then we come to nudist magazines. If they were printed only for the nudist cult, they would never exist. Their circulation would not support the cost of printing. These total exposures are not of nudists in some instances, but rather of paid professional models. Group exposure is a hallmark of these cultists. However, it's been well stated that very few blind people join the nudist colony. This mixture of male and female with total anatomical detail is typical of these magazines. A young boy in Philadelphia raped and killed a 5-year-old girl. And while he was testifying that he had been stimulated to this heinous crime by reading a nudist magazine, a federal court judge in Washington was granting to that very same publication a second-class mailing permit. And then we come to a terribly sad indictment of our society, the so-called physique group of publications. These magazines with a homosexual viewpoint and poses are often not understood by many youngsters who take them as instruction of body development. But psychiatrists believe that prolonged exposure of even the normal male adult to this type of publication, though he may not be aware of its true nature, will nevertheless pervert. Think then of the consequences to the inexperienced youth who, in purchasing and studying this material, becomes a pawn for these misfits, these homosexuals, who have a slogan that betrays the evil of the breed. Today's conquest, they say, is tomorrow's competition. See the tender age at which homosexuals prefer their conquest. Look here at the young face and bright smile which could be the hope of the world. But in the other half of the picture is revealed the seduction of the innocent. Look at this poor young lad, but when looking, think of the others who might follow his perfidious footsteps when photos like these are available at the corner news rack. And so it goes, countless poses, still pictures, slides, movies, all with the same content. And more of the same. This picture is not one typical of the physique magazine. It approaches another class of magazines dealing with transvestites, wherein the wearing of female garments is that which provides sex gratification for the participant. This picture, of course, merely confesses on the cover of the magazine the charges we have made. In this ad, the titles of the magazines and their table of contents speak more eloquently than I of the tremendous problem here presented. Sexual sadism, strange flagellation cult, erotic, confessions of a sadist. What is fetishism? The pleasure of pain, the worship of the whip. sexual problems of a masochist. How to buy a whipping. Famous transvestites. Are cross-dressers afraid of sex? These titles lead us to an even more bizarre, but nevertheless common product of our news wrap. The composite picture here speaks for itself. This type of aberration is usually depicted by showing several persons, one of whom is dominant, and binding or inflicting pain upon the other. And thus, the grotesque costuming and the significance of the extreme spiked heel and the tight boots, the riding crop, the burning cigarette, rubber and leather garments, and all the rest. And here again, an appeal to the sodomist with a play upon the buttons, the lace leather garments. This picture hints at the common idea of bestiality. Dr. Sorokin, the renowned sociologist at Harvard, says that today the newsstand, quote, depicts the world as a sort of human zoo inhabited by raped, mutilated, and murdered females, and by he-males, outmatching in bestiality cavemen and outlusting the lustiest of animals. Male and female alike are hardened in cynical contempt of human life and values, unquote.
A place apart. A world of its own. A hill in the city of Los Angeles. A remnant of America at the turn of the century. This hill is waiting. Waiting for the bulldozers, the bucket cranes. Bunker Hill is waiting to be leveled, to make way for a new world of concrete, steel, and glass. Still, this place is part of our heritage, as the concrete, steel, and glass will someday be. And something more will fall when the hill is torn away. A magic chariot will topple to the ground, a gaudy colored chariot that can still take us back to the world of the near past. Over 60 years ago, 150 million passengers ago, Angel's Flight began its first climb upward from the lowlands of Los Angeles to the crest of Bunker Hill. From top to bottom, 300 feet, the world's shortest franchise railway. Price? Still a nickel a ride. It has rolled on through the turn of the century. The war to save democracy. The tumbling walls of Wall Street. Rolled on through the dark days of the Depression. Past World War II. Into the atomic age and the new age of outer space. These are facts, but more than facts, more than cables, tracks, or the cars themselves. Angel's Flight is people, the people who need it, because they are the people on the hill. Up the hill to them is a ride all the way home. The people who have heard about it and have come to see it. Flights of Fancy on Angel's Flight. Angel's Flight is also those who walked in its shadow. And those who run the flight. Thank you. Far more than angels' flight will fall when these ties and tracks are torn apart. One more safety valve of a saner, more lifelike pace. One more part of our heritage will be sold for scrap. Throughout this city, this nation, in the impatient world of the new, there is little room for the old.
Laws are a challenge, not a thing to me. All the best things you might get got. Mischief, always call me maybe or don't.
Slide parade of plans. Oh, sorry, bad Wi-Fi, all jammed. Yeah, sweetheart. picture, promise me you'll check in, babe. You practice empathy, extraction, siphon any blush I gave. Collect my shrugs, upcycled context, scrapbook moments not for trade. Cup of noise, you're stirring honey, chasing secrets I mislaid. Timeline, sideshow, sideshow, spin in memory lane, but who's that kid? Metal for effort, pin on my jacket, bystander sprinting from the quiz. Hand me that spare umbrella, forecast calls for TMI. Frosty layers, wink conveyor, watch me leave.
get yourself alone, get yourself contained, get yourself control, control. That's a trick, I'm under your skin. Let the words slip. Laughing in the dark, I keep it lit. You missed the clues, I ain't worried one bit. Not my problem if your mind's slow. Nah, scope you out like cobbler Alamo, girl. Play it slick, no need for showboating. The fact that you don't get it, I'm still flowing. Yeah, you miss what I'm saying, it's fine. This is all just going down in your mind. Every laugh line has a truth behind. It's almost over, so enjoy the decline. You don't get it, that's on you, yeah. I'm still flashing in the dark like I do. If you ain't seeing what's right here, babe, that's your problem. Your blind spot is fear, yeah. Keep pretending, keep having the worst time. You don't get it, it sure ain't the first time. I'm not here for explanations, nah, just playing my game. Act like you get it. I'm just here vibing, not your problem. If it's a mystery, I laugh, I tease you, fold. Call it what you want, I'm free. You wanna get scared off by your own stage fright. Keep it real and you'll be golden by the end of the night. Your eyes roll, missed the joke, but I already knew. Whatever it is, if you're reading it, it's for you. You shrug it off, tryna act like I'm a tease. But I see the flop sweating, shaky knees. Please, it's not my job. Doors open for you when you realize there is no you. Gotta look that fast. Keep it cool, but I see the sweat. Think you smart? Nah, I'm just 7. You forget, it's not even about the punch, it's about the chase. You blink, miss, now you got egg on your face. What a way. I'm joking, cause I can't fool. I don't have to ask if you laughing. I'm no skin off my back, that's facts. And now we excavate the strange, embarrassing and forbidden. And the fact that you don't get it doesn't mean I'm not kidding.
And the fact that you don't get it doesn't mean I'm not kidding.
And the fact that you,
the fact that you don't get it doesn't mean I'm not kidding.
And the fact that you, catch the joke. It's your trip.
You're listening to Emerson Damron's Medicated Minutes, America's number one avant-garde personal development program on K-Chung Los Angeles. Stay delicious, darling. Levity saves lives.